Hello. Hello. What is that sound? It's like chains jangling or something out there. Yeah. There's a bunch of guys wearing orange shirts here in the front. Ah, okay. Very cool. All right. Thank you very much for coming to my talk. My name is Scott Hanselman, and this is. Let's see. This is not plugged in. And clicky thing. NuGet in depth. Try to talk about the new NuGet package manager and how it can make open source better and hopefully make also commercial software better. I'll try to start at the basics as I always do and then work up into the crazy stuff as much as I possibly can. So you got a guy here in the front trying to take a picture. See, go, Bo, go. No flash. It's a paparazzi. They found me here. All right. So, what is NuGet? NuGet is an open source package manager that is run through the Outer Curve Foundation, and Phil Hack handles the Microsoft side of it. There is a pile of really good stuff happening in NuGet right now. There are thousands of packages. It's a package management system that's a lot like GEMS. Sometimes you'll hear comparisons between NuGet as a package manager and things like apt-get or Synaptic and the things on Linux. And it's important to point out the differences between a development time, compile time, local package manager and a system-level package manager. If you're on Linux and you say something like apt-get, you know, SSL lib C or something, that brings down a system-level package that's going to be shared by the entire operating system. It's machine-wide. NuGet and Maven and OpenWrap and package managers that are like that are usually developer conveniences that you bring down something into the developer's machine. It's not machine-wide. You're enabling a particular project. For example, there's another open source project at Microsoft called CoApp, and sometimes people think that CoApp and NuGet do similar things. CoApp is solving the system level, machine-wide, how do you get libraries down at install time, and NuGet is solving the developer reuse and packaging problem. These are just an example of some of the projects that are already up at NuGet.org, and it's a pretty cool thing. So, what is the goal? What is the point here? Well, there's a lot of really great software that has been around for a very long time that is not getting used enough. This is stuff that not enough people know about. The example that I always give is ELMA, which is Error Logging Modules and Handlers. It's just this amazing open source library that has been around forever, but for a lot of people, it just wasn't worth the hassle of figuring out how to get it. What's involved? Oh, sorry. So Microsoft's things. They're always throwing in a picture of the Death Star or, you know, Dr. Evil. You guys will eventually figure out that we are pure evil, right? You do know that about Microsoft, right? Okay. Ah, see. It's open source. We're friendly. Love open source now. don't trust him. We want to make open source software as easy as add reference. That's it. Honestly, I want to make Lego pieces, as I've been talking about over the last year. How do we do that? We want to build up that developer ecosystem. There's a lot of great open source projects like ELMA that not enough people are using. You may be the author of an open source project, but maybe not enough people are hearing about your project because it's too hard to get going with it. They have to download it and find it and set it up. Adding a library to a project, even to just look at it, requires a time investment that a lot of people aren't willing to do that. So what's the experience? What's it like right now to add an existing third-party library to a project? Well, typically, you start and you go and you Google with Bing to find that project. In this case, I'm going to go and search for ELMA. And in this particular case, I get lucky because it's on the first page. So then I go and figure it out, and I find the ELMA homepage. In this case, it's hosted at Google Code. That looks right, so I'll probably click on that. And then, well, I got a bunch of choices of things to download here. Not really sure which one. I don't want to build it. I just want to use it. Turns out that's the right one. So by some miracle, I'll download it. And awesome that we have a barcode there. Not really sure what to do with that, but good for you. Not really sure why I have a computer in my hand that's a phone, a computer that's a screen. I point the camera at the other computer, take a picture. It'd probably be easier for me to print it out, fax it to myself, scan it, make a PDF, then OCR the PDF, send that into Gmail. But good job that there is a QR code there. Thanks, Google. I download the file, the zip file that I want, and then I stick it in my temp folder. And before I extract it, though, I have to visit properties because it came from the internet and it has security applied to it. Don't forget to push the unblock button. Unblock my Elma zip file. Unzip it somewhere. We all have to figure out where these places go because there's really no standard place. Some people have a lib folder. Some people have packages folder. They put it in different places. I put it somewhere within my solution directory. Then I go into my project and I say add reference. I go and find it somewhere. It's not automatically added anywhere. I go digging for it. Then I need to read the instructions. At this point, I'll give up because I'm a developer. I don't actually read instructions. I need to add the correct configuration to the web config. If it was one line, maybe, but you know, of course, Elma is a billion lines and it's modules and handlers. If I mistype anything, it's not going to happen. But then it works. That's a lot of work. So that's just for a single assembly. What happens when I got to do version 2? Update it, uninstall it, get more, use 50 different projects. What about dependencies? That's the problem that exists. And if you look at things like GEMS and some of the other package managers that are already out there, they solve those problems. I think it's been a long time coming, and I think that we should have probably done this a couple years ago. So I always have questions after talks like this where someone comes up and says, why didn't you make a package manager before? I don't know, but we made one now. Because we didn't work there? I don't know. It should have been done. I agree. But thank goodness it's being done, and it's being done in a really interesting way. So we figure we can do much better. So the agenda today is to talk about some basics. What does it do? I want to talk about making packages and publishing packages. We'll juxtapose the command line versus the UI. There's actually two or three different ways to make NuGet packages. I'll try to show you a number of examples, and the best way to show examples is to just download the packages and poke around inside them, and we'll look at some conventions that NuGet packages create, the concept of transformations and pre-processing, as well as where PowerShell fits in. You may have heard that NuGet uses PowerShell in a very interesting way. We'll talk about the concept of what a NuGet server is, what the simplest one is, what a slightly more complex one is, and then what a gallery is. And then I'll try to find some extreme examples that might be fun for us to look at. And then the rest of it's just a pile of demos. So that's all the slides for today. I watched this Chinese movie called Yip Man on the airplane, and the guy was like... So I think that makes you more productive, maybe, or a better programmer. So I thought I'd try doing that before each talk now. All right, let's do this. Let's see a better way to do Elma. We'll fire up Visual Studio. I have removed all my toolbars in Visual Studio because I think it makes for a prettier experience. And I'm going to say new project, MVC web application. I'll make an internet application. And then what I'm going to do is, see, notice down here. See? Look. See that happening? Some things we're saying. It's saying adding. This is new in MVC 3, and I think you'll see this more and more. These are NuGet packages that are already installed. One of the big problems that we had with MVC is that every time we released a new version of MVC, every, you know, twice a year or something, or once a year, the jQuery project would come out with a new version of jQuery the next day. That's an ongoing kind of an issue. We'll talk about that in a second. But you can see that there are actually NuGet packages pre-installed. You can get to the NuGet stuff a couple of ways. You can right-click and say Add Library Package Reference, or go to the Tools menu I have a lot of macros. And and access it there, tools, library package manager. And here we see a list of installed packages. This list of packages here is the same as that packages.config file. Okay? So this and that should line up. Now I can click on online here. And by default, you'll have the official package source. And this is actually using OData to talk to an Orchard server. Orchard's our open source CMS. OData is the format that we're using to talk. And certainly if you like Umbraco or you have something else, we'll show you how to make your own OData service to do this a little bit later. Let's search for Elma. Just going to go off and do a query. Here is Elma. I can see number of downloads. I can hit install. Hit close. Notice how Visual Studio just noticed that package's file changed. Boom. There's Elma. The reference was automatically added. And the web config got updated. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to zoom out here. Don't worry about not being able to see it. Just get a sense of the size of that web config. I'm going to right-click again here, and I'm going to uninstall Elma. Watch the web config. See, it got a little smaller there? Let's look at the modules section here. I'm going to add Elma back. Notice how I don't worry about installing and uninstalling things. They clean up after themselves. There you go. See, Elma added modules and handlers. So what happened there? What was involved? We made the query up to the central NuGet server. We brought down this package. The package was applied. It uninstalls and installs cleanly. If I right-click on my project and say Open Folder in Windows Explorer, and then go up one directory. There's a folder here called Packages. And in there are the packages that were installed. I open that up, I can see this Elma package lives right there. We'll talk about the internals of that and what's involved in just a second. Not only can I install, but I can also update. So if I click over on the side here where it says Updates, it'll take a look at what I have already installed and see what's already been updated. So we have jQuery 1.5.1. jQuery 1.5.2 has come out. I'll go and update. Watch on the right-hand side. It's just updated my script. Notice also that this jQuery VS doc has a dependency on jQuery of a specific version. It says equals 1.5.2. So we keep track of this dependency trees as well. Now I go back to my installed packages and I can see that I've got 1.5.2 of jQuery. All right, so let's do this. Let's log into the NuGet server. We'll create a package of our own and we'll publish it and use it. And we'll see the whole circle of life that's involved here. So you go up to NuGet.org and you can download NuGet. NuGet is actually a VSIX file. And it's really, really small. I think it's like 400K. So it's really not a big deal to install it. I think I've got it actually lying around here somewhere. And when it installs itself, it'll show up in the extension manager. There we go. It's very fast to install. It's not a big deal. It doesn't require an MSI. It doesn't do anything scary to your system. It won't hurt anybody. So don't worry too much about it. The other thing that's nice about it is that it installs in Visual Studio Express. Even though Visual Studio Express doesn't formally allow anyone to get in there. You can't use extensions in Express. Certain signed extensions that are official for Microsoft can get in there, and NuGet is available in Visual Studio Express, which is very cool. I'm going to go and log into the NuGet gallery, if I can remember my password. And I can go to my account, and I can see my super, well, it was super secret before. Now you all know it. Now I've made my own, so now you don't know my key. Oh, damn. Foiled me again. So I've got this access key that is unique, and I can see the contributions, the things that I have submitted. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pop out to the command line here. Did I spell it right? All right, good. Okay, so I've got an empty folder here. And I've got NuGet actually at the command line as well. So there's the Visual Studio add VizIc stuff. And then there's also just NuGet.exe, which you could get if you just want that. I could go and do something like NuGet install jQuery from the DOS prompt. And it'll bring it down. It can't add it to Visual Studio, but it can certainly bring that down and take care of business, which is nice. NuGet.exe can also update itself. So if I had one version, I can just say NuGet update, and then the new one will update. I have NuGet.exe in my path. I've got nothing in this folder right now, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a folder called lib. And then in that folder, we'll code the way that old people code. You only get one chance at this. Copy from somewhere else that I had earlier. I always like to like move really fast inside of a console, like And then, like the young people, the 20-year-olds, dude, because that's how they talk. Dude, what was that? Is that Windows 7? Cool. That was really, wow. No, that's not Windows 7. That's DOS 4. It's F7. It's yummy. And then I could probably do this. Then I could do one of two things. I can actually type dir, sorry. I could type NuGet spec, and it will give me this package.nuspec file. And this is like this little XML file, and it just basically spits out a template. And I could fill this information out with the information that I would need to make my NuGet package. Or, because I just kind of coincidentally have this awesome DLL that's lying around, maybe I could say NuGet spec, I think it's assembly path. Assembly path. I type about 100 words a minute, but about 90 of them are errors. So it pretty much. So then that creates an awesome new spec, and rather than a package new spec. and actually looks at my assembly info and pulls the versioning out. So it gathers whatever it can about that DLL and saves me 3 seconds of time. It's kind of a cool demo, though. I could say whether or not my project has a dependency on another project. So I could say, well, I really require jQuery 1.5.1 or above. Or in this case, I don't have any. I could say things like, I work in ASP.NET web pages, and I work in jQuery, or I work in the console, or whatever. This package is lame. I could say things like, I require you to accept my license, and then link off to an RTF file and tell you that I have a particular license. And I could put in things like this, Scott and Brent and this guy. And I can put in different versions and stuff, and Netherlands thing library. Okay. Then I can say NuGet pack, attempting to build package. And then it goes and it built this new package file. That new package file, notice how it has the version number and it used the name that I put as the ID. Now remember this super secret access key. What I can do is I can say NuGet set API key. So now I've saved that. And then I can say, I think it's NuGet push in the name of the package. There you go. Then go in here, add library package reference online. Go to the official package details. Bam. I love it. You're clapping because it worked exactly as it was supposed to. Wow, it did what it was supposed to do. That's great. I'm not sure if you guys would clap harder if it failed horribly and like there was a blue screen at some point. Here, let me just give you people what you want because you're awful, awful people. We should have the camera guy in the front. Where's my camera friend here who has his camera? Can you get a picture like this? Somebody put that on Twitter and then send it to me. Yeah, you right there? Okay, help me out, brother. This is going to be awesome. Then send it to Scott Goo. Good? All right, thank you. You watch. It's going to be on the cover of computerworld.com. Microsoft sucks. Here's proof. So now I say install, and my package comes down, which is awesome. One of the things, though, that we can do that's a little bit more interesting than that, and that particular package is actually not very awesome. I'll bring up one that's better. I think Phil made a package at Mix with me on stage that was slightly less awesome. Phil.awesome. Notice that Phil depends on Scott Awesome. I'm going to hit install there. All right. And let me see here. Let's bring up a controller. This could be done in the console or anywhere. NuGet is not specific to ASP.NET. Awesome. Phil is awesomer. Okay, good job, Phil. And var some string. Now, when Phil made his package, he did something interesting. Notice how when I set my API key out and I said set API, it says, let's scroll up a little bit. It said, well, I didn't say that actually, but I say NuGet push source. We've got support now for a symbol server. A symbol server means that not only can I bring down NuGet packages, but I can also go into debugging, into symbols. And our partners at symbolsource.org would allow us to make a NuGet package and publish it to NuGet, and then make a parallel package with symbols and source code, and then send that off at the same time, which for open source is huge. If you want to go and debug something that's open source, it is no fun and non-trivial. So let's try to debug the Phil is awesomer thing here. Check that out. Going off and loading a bunch of symbols. Now I'm going to hit F11. Look at this. So I'm actually in the source code for Phil's project as if it were a piece of my own project. That's cool. If that didn't just completely blow your mind, either you don't know what I'm talking about or you have no soul. Imagine if you want to go and like download, you know, Anhibernate or some great open source project, but you don't want to have to build the whole thing from scratch just to debug it and send them a bug fix for a particular line. Now you can actually F11 into stuff as if it was your own project, which is pretty freaking amazing. So what that does is you just say tools options and you add in the symbol source, and then for those NuGet packages that have been created and sent not just to NuGet, but also for this public open source symbol server, they get those as well. Now notice where this is coming from though. It's in C symbols, which is where I set up my path. And this is crazy. I actually haven't figured this out yet. C symbols, source, public. Whoa. Public. A regular expression. W500. Look at the left-hand side. This is not NuGet. This is just how symbol servers work. But that's where that is. I think the next level down is hell. Point is, though, it was all seamless and automatic. This is actually an old thing. Symbol servers have been around for a very long time, as source servers have been around for a long time as well. You may have heard, of course, a while back when Microsoft announced that you could step into .NET source. You have this now. If you ever want to step into the .NET source code yourself, you just turn that on, enable .NET source stepping, and you can do that and debug into our libraries, which is pretty sweet. Now we're enabling that for everybody using NuGet, which is awesome. All right. So, that's doing it from the command line. But let's look at those files that we've created. I think we made these files. Notice that they've got friendly icons. I've gone and installed a click-once application called the NuGet Package Explorer. It automatically associates new package files with the NuGet Package Explorer. So I can double-click on one of these now and look inside it and see the metadata. So all that command line stuff that I think is really cool, you may not think is cool, and you want to do a lot of this stuff in a visual way. This file, this new package file, if I actually just make a copy of that and rename it .zip, it's just a zip file. Which is kind of scary, because did you know that everything now is just a zip file? Like all of it. It's like Inception. Like a Word doc is a zip file with XML in it, and a NewSpec is a zip file with XML in it. Pretty sure somebody's going to, pretty soon someone's going to rename an MP3 to a zip file, and it's going to be like an AAC inside of it or something. So these files are totally open and available to you. The spec is to open, and because it's an open thing, folks like OpenWrap support NuGet packages, and there's interoperability because there's nothing complicated going on here. Now, if I run the package explorer directly, I can go and say file new and create my package here, totally visually. All the stuff that I did before, as well as the tags, even the dependencies. I can actually go and do searches. So here I could go and search, say that I'm dependent on the Twitter helper, hit OK, and that's a nice visual way to go and create one of these. Then, from the Package Explorer, I can even publish as well. This is a really great tool to go and explore other interesting things. Let's take a look at the Elma example that we did. If I open up the Elma new package file, because that's the example I always use, we can see that Atif created it. It doesn't require any license acceptance. He's got his descriptions and summaries filled out. This package contents, there's just two folders to make Elma work, to bring in that logging system, to add the reference, and to update the web config. It's just two files. So what's going on there? Let's go back into our MVC application and take a look at what's going on. Remember that we updated the web config. The web config was pretty big. It's, you know, it was about 60 lines of code, and a chunk of that was Elma. If we look at these two folders, content and lib, lib just has the Elma DLL. So anything that's in there will automatically be added as a reference. So just because he stuck the Elma DLL in that folder, it got added as a reference. The only other thing that's in this entire package is this web config transform file. Let's open that up. That's it. So I thought this was a really creative thing. This is actually a very clever thing that the NuGet guys are doing. Rather than XSLT or some instructions or some code to tell it what to do, XML is just a tree. So it does a addition and subtraction. This is those nodes that need to be added. And it will automatically remove them without hurting anything. In fact, NuGet keeps around this information in the packages folder so that if you change a file that was added by NuGet, it'll say, well, I'm going to uninstall, but I'm not going to touch that because you changed it. It can actually compare what was in the package you downloaded to what you did. So we can do non-destructive web configs, and it makes it really, really easy, particularly in the ASP.NET space, to go in, add and remove stuff like this. It's very cool. No need to write any kind of XSLT. Let's bring down another more interesting package. I'm going to right-click and say Add Library Package Reference, and I'm going to bring down, let's say JSON. I know that there's a really good JSON. Newtonsoft, there it is. Really high-performance JSON serializer. And see how slow that is? It's a big packet, so I'm not sure what's going on there, right? Let's find out. It looks like it just added one thing. Why was that package a little bit slower than the Elma one? Well, I'm going to open up Explorer, I'll go up one, and I'll look in packages. And certainly when you're using NuGet, you don't have to do that. You don't have to look in this folder. Many people will never even bother looking or knowing that that exists, but I just kind of like to know what's going on. So let's open up Newtonsoft. We see that his package is about 2.5 megs. It's kind of big. Double-click on it, open up his lib, and check this out. By default, with NuGet, if you put a DLL in the lib folder, it'll automatically get added as a reference. But there's a convention, it's all totally documented on the NuGet site, that will automatically pick the right build of your DLL for the version of the .NET framework that you have. And here we've even got Silverlight for Windows Phone versus Silverlight 4. You see that there's a convention there. So James Newton King, who wrote JSON.NET, has made a single package that works anywhere, which is extremely clever of him, because now I can use that package on the Windows Phone or .NET 2 or .NET 3.5, and it's just going to work, as opposed to me having to think about it at the time of installation, which would be lame. So I'm willing to pay for a little bit additional payload now that that's come down. And NuGet 1.3, which was just released last week, we're releasing every month, we'll talk about that in a little bit, keeps a local machine-wide cache. So if you're on an airplane or somewhere, you don't want to pay for these downloads, you don't have to, because there's a local cache that will get you what you need without having to go up and hit the server. So that's very interesting. So we've seen a content folder. We've seen a live folder. Let's get a little bit more detail. We'll pick up another library. Let's look at Entity Framework. That's a good one. So Entity Framework comes with MVC3, but the Entity Framework SQL Server Compact support is its own thing. Let's take a look at that. We're starting to develop, and I say we, I mean kind of like the community, is starting to develop some standards, some conventions. Some of it's written down, some of it's not. This is all very new. For example, Entity Framework, that's something that you can see as a checkbox by it, it's already installed. Entity Framework dot SQL Server Compact is SQL Server Compact support for Entity Framework, and then Entity Framework dot sample would be a sample for that. So for example, if James Newton King wanted to make JSON.net, he'd have Newtonsoft, you know, JSON.net dot sample, and he'd have a sample for that. Or if there were some specific patterns he wanted to use, he could say like dot patterns. So I think we're going to start seeing the ability not only to get open source projects, but also adapters for open source projects to work with others, and I'll show you an example of that a little later, as well as samples and patterns. So you can even bring down like VS doc files and documentation with jQuery. So Entity Framework SQL Server Compact is interesting for a couple of reasons. It has a number of interesting dependencies. It depends on SQL Server Compact itself. So it's almost a package of packages. If you add that to your project, it will bring down Entity Framework and it will bring down SQL Server and a thing called the Web Activator that I'm going to show you because it's a little more advanced. So we're bringing down SQL Server Compact. There we go. See how this particular one requires license acceptance. So they've put in their new spec file, we need you to check the licenses and okay that ahead of time. So then I could click on those license terms and that'll go off to a EULA that I'd have to look at. It'll tell me that this is, Microsoft whatever license. So I'll just accept that because I never read those. Just kidding. There we go. So that just brought down a bunch of interesting things. Let's look at that package to see what the Entity Framework SQL Server Compact folks are doing that we can learn from. So this project has content and lib. There's the lib. In the content folder, though, there is another folder. The content folder in your NuGet package maps to the root of your project. So anything you throw in content automatically shows up in your project. So this app start folder that they put here will automatically show up in the root of my solution. So for example, in their app start, it looks like he's got a file here. We look at our project, there's that same file. Except notice, this file is a .cs, but the one in the NuGet package is a .cs.pp. That's pre-processing. So what is pre-processing and why do you care? Well, sometimes when you make a project and you want to integrate a little bit of code in it, you want to do it in such a way that you are using existing namespaces or existing things about the environment. So this meta package, this package of packages where Entity Framework SQL Server Compact wanted to get Entity Framework and SQL Compact and then tie them together, needed to drop a little bit of source code in my project. My project is called, I think, MVC Application 27. Here in this .pp file, pp is pre-processing, I've got the $ root namespace. And there's actually a whole pile of these kind of environment variables that are environment variables inside of Visual Studio. They're not actual DOS environment variables. Root namespace is the one you'll use the most. So by simply putting that token in this file and naming it .pp, I can see that that file automatically turned into my MVC application 27 dot app underscore start. So that's a nice way to make sure that things tie in and you're not hard coding things like namespaces. Now, one of the things that you want your NuGet packages to do is to just simply drop in or snap in like Lego. But in this example, we needed something to start up with the application. We needed to basically, you know, change the global ASA. Global ASA is where all of the work happens at startup in a web application. But it's really not appropriate for or easy for us to edit that. And I think that if you had a very complicated application, you probably wouldn't appreciate it if someone started poking around in your source code and changing it at a line-by-line basis. So how do we do something at startup that our application needs to do, but also do it in a way that can be undone very easily? So we came up with this idea of the app underscore start folder. It's totally just a convention. It doesn't actually need to be there. It's just that we like to name things in an intelligent way. And this file uses the web activator. Web activator is another NuGet package that David Ebo came up with. It uses a totally documented but often forgotten part of .NET 4 called pre-application start method. And it's basically run this before anything else. It says run this before anything else. And then all this package needs to do is line 9 there, just change the default connection factory from SQL Server to SQL Server Compact. So it might seem like a couple more lines of code than you'd need to do. Certainly, if you want, you could stick this line of code in your global ASAX. But by doing it this way with this app start means that I can then drop in other pieces of things. For example, if I wanted to bring in, I know Ninject is a nice package that does dependency injection and inversion of control. I say Ninject. Ninject has a package called ninject.mvc3. You see, again, this is another great example where we've got Ninject and then a package that depends on Ninject that is specific for MVC3. If I hit install on this one and then hit close, see, it added an app start. So now you can see why having a convention we can all agree upon, as well as a way for other people to plug in, makes for a happier time. And then we're not actually editing your global ASX, which is pretty sweet. Now, the other thing that's going on, particularly in the example of Entity Framework, was that they not only had a lib folder and a content folder, but also a tools folder. It's basically just those three folders. Stuff you're going to add to the project, references you're going to add, and then tools. And tools can use PowerShell. PowerShell is required for NuGet. PowerShell is the scripting environment that you have probably been avoiding for the last 5 years, and you can't anymore because it's inside of Visual Studio. So we finally got you, didn't we? This package management console comes with NuGet. You don't have to look at it if you don't want to, but your life will be easier if you play with this package. So we've got full PowerShell. See, I can see things like DIR, where is my current folder. It is PowerShell inside of VS. If I type in get host, this is the package manager host. It's part of PowerShell. PowerShell is already on your machine. I can say things like get package, get PA, tab, enter. And that's showing me the packages that are installed. I could say uninstall package, EL, tab, enter. Get package. Now it's gone. I can install packages from here. Already installed. But the thing that we can do also is we can run scripts within the context of NuGet. So in that SQL Server example, they've got an install.ps1. There's basically three files, init, install and uninstall. Install and uninstall run at install time and uninstall time. That's easy. Init runs as your package starts up the first time you open up your project. It might seem like a lot to remember, but actually once you play with it over a little while, it's really just the lib folder for your DLLs, content for your content, tools for your scripts, and that's pretty much it. Let's open up that file and see what's going on inside of the SQL Server Compact example. Don't feel like you really have to learn PowerShell. I was teasing a little bit. It's actually pretty straightforward. Most often what you'll do is you'll find a package, you'll say, I want mine to do that thing, and then you'll just steal the code, which is open source, yeah. In this example, SQL Server Compact needed to add references to stuff that was already on my machine. At some future version of NuGet, that'll probably be built in, so that you'll be able to describe in the new spec file that I need a reference to system.transactions, or I need a reference to system.data.entity. But here, this is getting called automatically by NuGet at the time of installation, and you see those parameters on line one. We're passing in where you're being installed from, where your tools are located in case you need something, the package, as well as the project. And because PowerShell is really smart about talking to COM, you can go and write automation code against Visual Studio. We also add a number of convenience methods, functions, and other variables that you can access from within this script. And in this case, we make it really easy to add a reference to your project. So this way, I can go and add a reference to like system.transactions, and it just works. Now that is a pretty straightforward example, but let me show you one that is a little bit wacky that that I've been working on. This is now pushing the kind of limits of what is appropriate in the NuGet world. What I wanted to do was I wanted to be able to make a web forms application a also MVC application. So I wanted to make a hybrid. I've always felt that this dialog box that you say new project really should have a list of checkboxes. That way I could have a little of this and a little of that. I want a web service, I want an OData, I want a WCF. But instead, they make you pick one, and then they make you feel like you're screwed. You've picked one, you don't get to pick anything else ever again. So here I just made a web forms application. Go and bring up my web form. Here's my web forms app, right? Works like a web forms app, looks like a web forms app. Okay? But what if I want to make a hybrid? Because I pointed out in my MVC talk earlier that it's all just ASP.NET. Why can't I have a little MVC3 and web forms? I want a hybrid. Codeplex.com is a hybrid. Parts of Codeplex are web forms and parts are MVC. And it's not a dirty thing. It's not bad. So what I came up with was this package. It doesn't work all the time, and I'm going to show you why, because I think it's a good example, and maybe you can help fix it for me. So I install package, add, and then when I hit tab, you see how there's a small pause there. We just made a query up to NuGet, and then we actually dynamically create that IntelliSense menu there. So new packages will appear. Like, didn't we put one up earlier? Yeah, there we are. See? So you're getting dynamic IntelliSense there. So add MVC3 to web forms. I'm going to pick this guy up. I don't know which one of these will do what I want. I don't know the difference between these two. I'll do that one. There you go. And then watch the right-hand side in the Solution Explorer. See the bottom there, scripts, references, watch the references, controllers. And you see that little failure right there? We'll talk about that failure in a second here. So that just took my web forms application and added views and scripts and models and all of this stuff that one would need to be also an MVC application. Now remember app start and why I needed it. The global ASAX of a web forms app looks a little bit different from an MVC application, but I need to get in there. I need to be involved in application start. So I used the web activator, and I used app start, and I did registering of routes. I did my MVC things by using web activator. I put a little thing in here that says, yeah, if you don't like that, you can move it. Then I also updated the web config, and I put in all the MVC stuff that needs to work and merged it in with web forms. So now if I run this application, there's web forms, right? And in the exact same application, I say home about, there's MVC. So I have now a hybrid application made in a not very painful way, which I think has potential. Think about all the different kinds of NuGet packages that you could do that would make tedious things not tedious. But why did I have this failure? Why did I have that weird failure that popped up earlier that I knew was going to happen? It says, unload project is not available. Well, one of the things that I'm kind of struggling with is you can do all sorts of cool and crazy things in PowerShell, but sometimes you reach a limitation. I'll show you what the limitation is because I think it's an interesting example. I do a few things in this particular script that I stole from other scripts, like I make sure that they know that this will only work on a certain version of NuGet. We're on version 1.3, so this is not a big deal anymore. But here's where things go bad. All of this stuff above hack is totally fine and appropriate. What I wanted to do is this. In MVC3, you're supposed to be able to right-click on things like controllers and say, add controller. Or you're supposed to be able to do things like open a home controller and right-click and say, add view. And you see how those are not there? That's because you need what's called a project GUID that says, this is a project of type MVC. So I got the silly idea that I would dig into Visual Studio and get a hold of the project and shove the GUID in there. And I did, and it works great. Works totally fine. I do a little calm, crazy stuff, and I say, hey, get this. And this is always nice, by the way, when you see a comment like that. Wrong. I go and I get a hold of Visual Studio and I set the current project GUID and I say, if you don't already have it, then add it. And then I try to do this. Unload and reload. I need to actually close Visual Studio and then reload it up again. And I can't get it to work. It works about 6 times out of 10. It's one of those things where I want to put like a sleep statement in there. And you know when you're writing code, if you have to go and say, 4i to 1,000, wait, you should just stop. Because whatever you're doing it wrong. And I know that I'm doing something wrong here. This is the limitation of my abilities more than it is the limitation of NuGet. So if I unload the project, I can see that I did successfully put the MVC GUID there. And then when I reload the project again, I can right-click. I've got my controller. So this is an extreme example of stuff that you can do. I'll show you another one that's a little bit interesting. Given that you really have full control, it is all PowerShell. You can pretty much go bananas. Let's say, I think Phil called it Magic 8-Ball. You guys have a Magic 8-Ball here? You know what this is? Right? It's like a big black ball, and then you shake it. And you make all of your corporate decisions based on what it says, right? It's how Microsoft works, isn't it, how things work here? So let's run that. Notice how nothing appeared on the right-hand side. The Magic 8-Ball package doesn't add anything. Instead, what it does is it adds a new command to PowerShell. Packages can actually influence what's going on in PowerShell. And so get answer was added by the NuGet package. So now we're getting into some really interesting, more advanced things. Not only can you go and modify PowerShell, modify Visual Studio rather, but in this example, You can actually write little things and say things like function get answer. So I've added a functionality to Visual Studio. This is a trivial example. We'll take a look at a couple of more interesting ones a little bit later. But we can also do things like register tab expansion, which is pretty cool. You know, and actually, I'll show you a really cool example of extending PowerShell in a very clever way using NuGet. Is, let's do this. Let's say add library package reference, and I'll bring up the MVC scaffolding. This is an extreme example. I can't think of a package that does more interesting stuff than MVC scaffolding. If you saw in the keynote or a little bit in the MVC talk that I did earlier, this is telling me that packages that contain an init need to happen at the package manager console. That is true. I did some scaffolding, and I scaffolded out a little application in a very small amount of time. MVC scaffolding takes that and really extends it. So we've added a couple of things to our project. Actually, what I'll do is I'll start with a proper MVC3 project instead of doing one in web forms here. And it adds a whole series of new scripts, and it does it in a really elegant way that I think that we're going to see more and more scaffolding extensions and PowerShell extensions, because while this is an MVC scaffolding, it actually depends on a thing called T4 scaffolding. So T4 is a code generation system, so what Steve Sanderson has done is he's brought down a package that's added some functions to PowerShell that allow us to generate code from inside PowerShell itself. So NuGet makes it really easy to bring it down. PowerShell and NuGet integration makes it easy to run. So then I could go and take a model here. Like, let's go and add our blog model that we used before. Here's a quick little model of a blog. Blogs have posts, and blogs have comments. And just by adding MVC scaffolding, a new command called scaffold has shown up. It's actually an alias for invoke scaffolder. This means that he's brought down a bunch of scripts and he's influenced my system. So I'm going to say scaffold controller post. And it all happens at the command line. And in this particular example, he's going to make a controller for me, as well as, watch on the right-hand side there, all of these posts. And it's funny because Scott Gu was saying that it makes all of his demos really short. He can talk about what you can get done in MVC in just a few minutes. But what I think is so interesting is, like we talked about Lego pieces in the keynote, think of all the parts that work really well together to make this happen. You've got T4 code generation, which is awesome. You've got reflection and dynamic objects and new features in C# 4. You've got PowerShell, Visual Studio, and NuGet all working together in a very clean way to automate what is ordinarily very tedious and not very fun work. So if we say get scaffolder, what Steve Sanderson has done is he's added extensibility to his NuGet package, so other people can write packages on his system. He's almost invented a new kind of category of NuGet package. I can even go and do things like install package. I think he made one called link to SQL scaffolding. So if you don't like Entity Framework, maybe you like link to SQL. Now I go to get scaffolder, and link to SQL scaffolding is there. So think about what you could do with this. You could make web form scaffolding, Silverlight scaffolding. You could create all sorts of stuff. He's even done this, which I think is amazing. Let's move the package manager console down to the bottom here. Remember when I was creating actions earlier, if I was going to go and create a new action, he allows us to actually scaffold an action, my new action. Mandatory scaffold action. controller, and we're in the home controller. That was a little subtle. Let me try to do that again. We'll make my new action 2. You see that? He actually figured out a way to do what I said we shouldn't be doing, which is editing source code itself. So I said, I want a new action. And you might say, well, that's lame. Why couldn't you just copy-pasted that? Why did you have to type all that crap in PowerShell? But what did he actually do? Look on the right-hand side in the Views folder under Home. When you need a new action, inevitably you need a new view. So he has gone and not only generated a new view, but he actually reached into the source code itself using automation in Visual Studio and that code automation model and created that. So what, right? Maybe that's a curiosity. Well, what if you can scaffold out unit tests, unit testing framework? Then things start getting really interesting. People have said that Visual Studio sucks because there's too many dialogues and too much clicking and too many dragging of this and that. But being able to really extend PowerShell and automate not only generation of new files, but even something as granular as a method in a controller, I think it comes really, really interesting. Now, so far, I've only talked about open source, but I think that you running a NuGet server at your place of work or internally to your company, or maybe if you're a commercial software vendor, that starts becoming really interesting. So let me show you another extreme example of what you can do with NuGet. And I'm showing you this not to confuse you, but hopefully to inspire you to think about all the crazy stuff that you could potentially build with this. I'm going to go and make an empty web application. This is a web application with nothing in it. Okay? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say add library package reference. And there's a package that Phil Hack made that I thought was pretty clever, called a NuGet server. Notice how I have on my system not only just the official package source, but a bunch of other locations. Well, a NuGet server is actually a few things. It could be a server up in the sky somewhere, or it could just be a folder on your machine. So if you have your own personal packages that you don't want to publish to anyone, just put them in a folder, and that's now an available source. If you want to make a poor man's NuGet server, put a share out in your network, throw a bunch of package files in it, and it'll just work. If you want to develop on an airplane, just do the same thing. I can go and take my NuGet server and then just move it up in the list here. But what you can also do is run your own. So check this out. Add library package reference, NuGet server. So I made an empty project. On the right-hand side, look what's happening. I wouldn't recommend that people do this, but I think it's just such a clever idea. Basically what he did, because NuGet is just so darn convenient, that rather than forcing you to go to CodePlex and download something and unzip it, he said, just make an empty package and I'll take over. So he takes over and makes a little tiny NuGet server. Click here to view your packages. Well, there aren't any, right? Well, there's a folder over here called packages. So let's open that, and we'll do a little whoopsh. And let's find a package. Let's take our Netherlands one, drop it in there, hit refresh, boom. So there is a great example of some source code that you can play with where we now have made our own read-only NuGet server. So we're starting to build up how these concepts work, right? Put your NuGet packages in a folder and it'll be just fine. Network share, fine. Tiny read-only personal server or work server, fine. Or if you want to go and get Orchard and the gallery server, it's at galleryserver.codeplex.com, you could make an internal corporate NuGet server. Allows submissions and all the great stuff that we use at NuGet.org. It's all open source, and you can play with that. Or if you're a commercial software vendor, I'm going to be talking about this at TechEd, and those videos will be online in a couple of weeks. At TechEd in Atlanta, I'm going to be doing a talk called NuGet for the Enterprise. What does it mean if a commercial software vendor allowed me to purchase a subscription, then go in and get a special URL just for me so that I could go and get my NuGet packages from my subscription? It starts becoming really interesting. Think about delivering updates and all of the kinds of things that you could potentially do there. I'll show you one more cool example that'll hopefully get you thinking about what you could potentially accomplish with NuGet. I hope you can tell I'm pretty excited about it. This particular project was created by Phil because I do a lot of presenting, and he made a project that he calls Mood Swings. And what's cool about Mood Swings is that it will let you change and automate Visual Studio for like fonts and stuff. So I could do something like set mood. I think he said presentation. Actually, that's the one I'm already in. Coding, presentation, set mood, insane, which is pretty cool. We even put in this one here, which I think is kind of cool to show you the power of PowerShell. Where's my audio guy? Give me some audio guy. It's all done in ASCII. Isn't that cool? PowerShell, baby. That was actually done by Lee Holmes. So what I want you guys to be thinking about are what you can potentially do with NuGet. It's an Outer Curve Foundation project, so it's open source, meaning you can commit to it. People are already committing to the NuGet project, which means that code that maybe you write, if you decide to get involved, will show up in a future version of Visual Studio. Even though we're sneaking NuGet onto your machines by putting it in MVC, because it's really a great thing for MVC to use, it's not specific to that. If you're a Windows Phone 7 developer, you'll see that people like Sean Wildermuth and his phony tools are in NuGet. There's lots of Silverlight stuff in NuGet, WPF stuff in there as well. So it's not specific to the web. External contributions are allowed, so I would really encourage you to get involved. All the discussions are being done in public. So anytime anyone tries to start an internal discussion at Microsoft, Phil always says, no, no, switch that over to nuget.codeplex.com. Currently, it's releasing a point release, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, about every month until we really get it solid. And actually, let me show you the stats. We've had a really popular bit of uptake lately. Things have worked out pretty nicely for it. If we go to stats.nuget.org, so far, we've had 589,000 downloads. There's 1,300 unique packages. You can see hourly. This is probably me. Numbers are good. Oh, look at that. Awesome. So definitely, please get involved. I think that while open source is a really great place for NuGet to live, and I think a lot of exciting things are going to happen with NuGet and open source, I think that for the enterprise, it is even more interesting. Start thinking about what you can do to spread the word within your company and how you could even package up libraries that you're never going to release but you want to use internally. And that's my talk. Thank you very much.